Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Survivor plays, and then Abbott Elementary's right after Survivor. So Wednesdays truly are going to be the best of the week. Hey, my name is Sarah, and welcome back to another episode of Talking Fast. I am alongside Jacob, as always, and first off, what are you drinking?
Sarah, what I'm drinking, and actually this was a big mistake, I think. I have to admit, I was chewing a piece of gum not an hour ago, and I needed a quick hit of sugar. I thought so.
Okay.
I picked up a lemonade. Get this.
Interesting choice.
Spearmint gum and lemonade do not mix. Individually, fantastic. Love gum. Love lemonade.
Yeah. But together, I feel like it'd be like when you brush your teeth and then if you drink, like lemonade would be one of the first
things. There are some like interesting people who enjoy the taste of orange juice after brushing the teeth. I'm not one of them.
No, me neither.
And this was kind of like one of those bad experiences for me where
anything
I was like,
fruity with acid post brushing teeth or gum is not it.
Yeah, it was not it. But what do you got? What are you drinking?
I'm drinking iced tea right now. So what
iced
is this?
Tea. Peach iced tea.
Peach Pure Life iced tea. You know, I love a nest tea, but this one feels like, I don't know, I'm fooling myself into being healthier. So
I was going to say, is there caffeine in there too?
I hope so. I actually have no idea if there's caffeine in this. I hope there's a little bit because I didn't have time to grab a coffee. But if I had a coffee, I'd be like vibrating right now. So I don't really know if that was necessarily what I needed. So.
The iced tea is a chill caffeine.
Yeah. And also what I've been doing, I almost grabbed a Diet Coke. I'm really trying to cut Diet Coke this year because I became addicted to it last year. And also then I'll like be like all burpy the whole episode, which we don't really need if I do that. So we opted for iced tea. No, it could not be. I would cut all of that out anyways because I edit this.
A lot of jump cuts. It'd be a lot.
It'd just be you like half sentences the whole time.
Sarah, I'm excited for this next question. What are we watching this week?
So for the first time ever, I think we're watching or watched the same thing.
Yeah. And follow up on the last episode, though, I have to atone for my wrongdoings. Mm-hmm. I got roasted a little bit over that episode
for not watching
Abbott Elementary. I'm happy to say I watched the first 5 episodes. I binged them because it was so funny. I'm a fan of the show. I'm going to continue. But what I moved on to and what I know you were watching as well.
Wait.
What?
Before like we're
don't
on
ask
a cliffhanger
me
right now.
Anything.
No, I'm not going to. I was going to say that I wasn't bullying you because you hadn't watched it. I was bullying you because you had never heard of it.
Oh, that's fair. You know what? I'll take that. It was a deserved bullying because it's a really good show.
This just goes to show that bullying works, kids. And you can.
This week,
I'm kidding.
Sponsored by bullying.
Yeah, sponsored by bullying. Light bullying works if it's for the betterment of the person's life.
I guess so. And that's kind of a theme in the show that we were watching this
so
week
good.
As well.
So good.
Because in the backroom kitchens of the restaurant world, a lot of bullying seems to happen. This was my first foray into it.
Yeah.
Catching up on watching the entire season of The Bear.
Same. So I was editing the Julia episode today. And a couple of weeks ago, you actually brought up you would only watch the first episode. And I actually needed to ask you, how did you only watch one episode of that show and then stop watching it?
A lot of people get upset with me about this who try to watch, you know, or watching a show at the same time, they'll be like, oh, like, did you get into the show? I'll be like, yeah, I watched the first episode. They're like, oh, like, what did you think of the rest of the entire season or like five seasons that I told you to watch? It's like, I only watched the first one. I'm sorry. There's just so much out there that I get distracted sometimes.
So you just have like a little, it's like a buffet. You have a little taste of everything and you never like have the full steak. Like that's what it feels like.
Watching is like the Mandarin. I watch in, I'm going to have a lot of this, a little bit of that. And I, of course, I go straight to the
dessert
table.
You get the pizza and the crab legs and a little bit of Caesar salad. You have it all.
Okay. I'm not kidding. This is my first time. Last week, we were talking about how it's down in Mexico. This is an aside, but like the buffet there,
okay,
I was always judged when I came back to the table after like we all went our separate ways at the buffet to like get a couple of different things. And it's because my plate was always loaded to the top with like the most random stuff. And one of the days it was like half desserts and half salad. It was very, it was a very strange experience.
That's exactly what Nolan was doing in Cuba too. And I was like, you can get multiple plates. Like you can get up and like, you don't have to pile it all onto one either.
Well, see, I get overwhelmed. And that's what happened after I watched the first episode of The Bear. I just totally forgot about it, even though it's so
that's
good.
Insane. It's honestly like one of the best pilots I've ever seen of television. Yeah. I never worked in a kitchen, but I worked as a server at a banquet hall, so like with a kitchen, and it's done so well. Also, Maddie Matheson is only in the show, but he's also a producer on the show who
I noticed
like
that.
Was an advisor for the show to make sure they were like using proper lingo and like to actually talk about the dynamic of working in a kitchen and what that's like from a high-end kitchen to your mom and pop shop in Chicago.
I assume would be super helpful for a show like this, but also he's just so funny on the show himself as like
he's
the
so good. He's a good like comedic relief. There's so many layers to the show. I don't want to spoil anything, but like if you haven't watched it, take this as your sign to go on Disney Plus. It's only 8 episodes.
And stick around for episode 7. Episode seven is insane. One of the best episodes of TV I've ever seen.
It's why he won the Golden Globe.
Yeah.
It's absolutely insane. I'm glad we can agree on that. I honestly would rewatch The Bear before season 2 comes out. I loved it as much as I loved like Ted Lasso, and that's saying something.
Season 1.
All of Ted Lasso. I also have a huge crush on Jason Sudeikis though, so like that's also jades my view a little bit. So that moves us on to what are we listening to?
Well, Sarah, I took a little bit of a road trip over the weekend as well. And one thing that I was firing up on my Spotify.
Was Midnights?
No.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately not. There was a little bit of Taylor Swift because I was kind of diving into, I was with a bunch of friends that like I kind of grew up with in my like teen years and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And what we were listening to, we would throw on like, the top hits of X. So it'd be like the top hits of 2007, the top hits of 2008. And there were some bangers in there. Avril Lavigne, you know, has a lot of sleepers that I think this generation should probably fire back and watch.
Actually,
or listen to, sorry.
Speaking of this generation, our associate producer, Izzy,
That was kind of a shot at Izzy on the side.
Izzy tries to tell us that Avril Lavigne was her childhood. But Izzy was born in 2000.
Gen Z, listen, Gen Z's great, but they cannot claim Avril Lavigne.
Avril's not one of them.
No.
Not one of them.
Absolutely.
We love you, Izzy, but she's not one of yours.
What are you listening to?
So this is going to sound weird, but I haven't been listening to like music. I've been listening to YouTube videos. And what I mean is like when I'm working, I can't, you obviously can't watch.
Like rainforest sounds or something?
No. Like people talk, or like when GQ does 10 things I can't live without, or the actors round table, it kind of feels like a podcast to me because I don't need to be watching that. I don't need them like showing a tennis racket. I can just listen to it. So what I've been doing is playing those in the background while I'm working. And so I feel like I'm listening to a podcast, but it's just YouTube videos.
Just like getting some work done and absorbing some like fantastic
like today
knowledge.
I was listening to / watching Matt Damon's like career and like all about his career and like all the different movies he's done. Just like random things like that. So it's almost like it's like a meta version of like listening to a podcast. It's not a podcast, you know?
Love it. And what's Matt Damon up to these days?
These days, I think the video's from a couple years ago. I have no idea what he's up to these days, but he talked a lot about.
No, I'm a Matt Damon fan. That's no shade to Matt Damon. I like Matt Damon.
I think I like Matt Damon.
You think you like Matt Damon?
Like I don't really have an opinion on Matt Damon.
Good Will Hunting?
Well, I mean, that's what I was going to say is Good Will Hunting is like one of my favorite movies. So it's like, that's why I watched, listened to it.
He's wicked smart.
That was a great impression.
This is where I retire.
I think this is where we go to the next segment.
Yeah.
You You truly never know who you'll be seated across from at a random event on a Thursday night, but sometimes you get lucky enough and can meet someone as wonderful and talented as this next guest. We hit it off talking about all things the creative process and, of course, Taylor Swift. I fangirled when I realized this artist is the one whose work was spread across the streets of Toronto on billboards and bus stops. If you don't recognize him, you should recognize his amazing work, including this shirt that I am wearing right now. He's collaborated with some of the biggest brands from Adidas to TikTok, and now we're lucky enough to welcome Nasheed to Talking Fast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The one thing I want to dive into first is the fact that you actually started as an architect before you were an artist. So tell me about why you wanted to become an architect and then how that transition happened for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, growing up, I never thought I was going to become an artist. It was something that I liked to do, and it was very therapeutic. But like the idea of being a professional artist had so much stigma behind it. I had to try and figure out a way to make money using my passion, and architecture felt like a good fit. Coming from a Bengali household, there was a lot of pressure to like do one of the big three, and architecture kind of fit into engineering.
Kind of adjacent, so they work together.
So that was the goal, and I actually tried to get into architecture in undergrad, but it was super competitive and I didn't take high school as seriously as I probably should have. So I ended up going to Waterloo, and I did urban planning for my first semester, but I had taken a fine art elective. And that's when I was in an environment where everybody else in the class was really good. Like in high school, I kind of excelled just because like it wasn't an art high school, and I liked it. So I got a lot of attention from my teacher and like got great marks. But in undergrad, these students were taking art seriously their whole lives. And it was a little bit intimidating to be in that environment. So that's when I decided that that challenge would be good for me to maybe just like get this art like thing in my body out of my system, but get good grades, create a cool portfolio, and maybe try for architecture in grad school. And it worked out. I got into U of T and I did my master's program there. And it was a really hectic 3.5 year program after a 5 year undergrad.
I was going to say, I lived on the same floor as architects when I was an undergrad, and those boys never slept. Like I would go to the bar, come back, and they would still be working. So I can't even imagine what a master's at U of T and that would be like.
After I graduated, I was able to kind of align myself with a firm that created an opportunity for me to be more specialized in like graphical communications, but it wasn't clicking. Like no matter how like specialized and how many opportunities they gave me, it wasn't like sitting right. I wasn't satisfied. And a lot of the other people at the firm also kind of had this like jadedness to them that made me feel scared for my future.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're like, oh, is this going to be me in literally like 3 years then if you're already jaded and like miserable at it? Yeah. It's like looking into the looking glass a little bit.
I don't know. You don't want to leave and then fail at whatever. And then you become like people, everyone knows each other and it's really like weird and scary. So when I was having my doubts, I was like intimidated, and I don't know. It took a lot of courage to like decide I'm gonna leave this, and on top of that, like I'm gonna leave this to try and like focus on art. That was like,
I would imagine they're like you're like, I kind of sound crazy doing this, which is probably like part of the reason why I like ended up working out. So my question was gonna be then, if you were you already starting to do your art on the side, like while you were working this firm, or was it like an all or nothing thing? Did you just dive right into it full time?
Yeah, that was the question at the beginning. I was doing a few like experiments on the side. Like I had done this thing with like heat pressing special like apparel and like Bengali fabrics onto t-shirts to try and do like anime designs, but that didn't work out actually.
Oh, really?
It was just like one of those.
Was that a business or was that just like a passion thing?
That was me trying to figure out how I can make this a business.
Okay, yeah.
And I was actually sketching out designs and stuff. And it's funny, like we'll kind of get back to this, but there was a sketch that I had done of like Drake, and on top of his eyes was a Kennedy Road sign, because he talks about Kennedy Road. I'm from Scarborough. And I was talking to my wife at that time, my girlfriend, about this idea and how like I was going to turn this into like a graphic design project or maybe hire somebody to make the painting for me because I didn't have the confidence in my art abilities then. She was like, you totally should do that.
Oh my God. Like you actually were going to hire somebody. Like, you didn't think you were going to be able to do it.
Yeah. This was like in 2019 summer.
Oh my God. Like recently.
Really recently.
Wow. That's crazy. So your like trajectory has been like, it's been a whirlwind then.
Over yeah.
The past couple years. Cause to go from you think you're going to hire somebody to now, like you had stuff on like that same like painting, like on billboards across there, like on bus stops across the city.
And you're coming at it from the perspective of wanting it to be a successful business. Like you said, to kind of transfer getting out of the architecture game and then have something backed up.
Exactly.
But then you weren't confident in the artistic abilities. Where did that change happen then to, you know,
become very confident in it? It's literally on the shirt that I'm wearing right now. Like that's insane.
So I had like seen a video on YouTube about this graphic designer, and he had done like a poster every day. It was like a challenge he did for himself, and by the end of the year he grew his Instagram following to like 30,000 from like zero. And he got recruited by this top design agency in New York. There was also an anecdote that my sculpture professor in Waterloo had told us along the same lines, where there were like two classes. Class one, I only had like one project. That was their final project. And they could spend the term kind of brainstorming and ideating, but they didn't have to create anything up until the final project. But then the second class had to produce something every week. And by the end of the term, that second class by far had the best final projects, even though they weren't like ideating as much. So the idea of consistency and just trying to like push myself to do that inspired me to do a daily challenge, because I knew I was lacking in a lot of like fundamental areas with my art practice. Like, art school for me was to get into architecture school. And I was interested in a lot of ideas, and the concept of anonymity was present there. And like using flowers and like floral motifs also existed. So it's nice to see it kind of all kind of carry forward for whatever reason that is innate to like my interests. But I decided in 2020 that I will do this daily art challenge with the hope of really honing in on like my areas of weakness. So in January, I specifically honed in on doing black and white portraiture. I sucked at portraits. In art school, I did landscape paintings.
Okay.
So now like my whole practice is based on portraiture.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
I know.
Can you see in your own development, like if you look back at that kind of the whole challenge, can you see the development of your own artistic style and obviously technical abilities and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, no, 100%. Digital art is really hard.
Yes.
It's so challenging. And I think there's still like a lot of misconception with like how easy it is to maybe create something digitally. And now with AI art being a conversation topic, it makes it a little bit more challenging to like validate yourself to people who don't understand what kind of skill it takes to create something nice digitally. One of my first illustrations with my iPad was this like really dinky like microphone illustration in front of like a pink background, because I love karaoke.
I love that.
I just try to make like a few illustrations inspired by the things I love most.
Yeah,
so
of
like
course.
Illustration one was a burger, illustration two was this microphone. Yeah, and they were so bad. Like, I'll send them to you.
Okay, bad by like if we use this iPad right now and Jacob and I try and draw the
my
same
standards
things,
are very low for
the
even
only
a
thing I know how to do is like caricatures, because when I was a child I wanted to be a caricature. It's like the people at Wonderland that draw
that's
people.
So yeah,
that's the only.
But I guess that's kind of the idea too, right? About just digital art in general, is that there's a lot of misconceptions about.
Well, I guess maybe even not digital art. All different mediums has maybe, you know, not that people look down on one or the other, but they don't necessarily understand what goes into the production process of a piece of art if they don't know how to do it themselves.
One thing I love that you do is with your art, you say how many hours like you spent working on it. And that's like one of the beauties of digital art is like it literally tracks it for you and it will tell you how many strokes, how many like hours you did it. And that's really cool because it's like, no, this is the amount of labor it took to do this, which is really cool. And I love that you like put that into it. One thing with consistency is I see so many parallels between your art journey and then like my like doing TikTok content because it was like the same thing out of like a, okay, I guess I'm going to do it every day and that consistency. Do you think that then helped with you creating an audience online and not just creating art, but creating content as well, because you already knew how important consistency was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think there are definitely two elements to this growth. Like consistency on its own is one thing, but figuring out how to present that to an audience is a whole other beast. So for example, in 2019, before I got my iPad, I did this challenge called Inktober. Are you familiar with it at all?
No.
So I guess it happens every year, and it originally started with this one guy. He releases a set of daily prompts that you have to illustrate every day in October.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Like day one would be like pumpkin, day four might be like skeleton, you know, for example.
Yeah.
And I did it just to kind of reactivate my art energy, and I posted it, but I wasn't actively trying to grow my account at that time. It was more like documentation. And my account didn't grow at all, but it was nice to kind of just like get used to posting again. Cause prior to that, my account was very dry. The last time I posted anything was probably like 2017 and like, it wasn't very active. So putting my art online felt like the biggest, like I was super anxious to post anything.
Well, that's super vulnerable. Like putting your most authentic self out there to be judged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which it's like when you were doing architecture, it's different. You're working for a client. It's not like, even if it is your original idea, it's only to a certain point. So yeah, it's like putting your thoughts, your feelings, your perspective on the world out there. That's a very like scary thing to do.
And with something like art, anyone's going to have their own opinion about it. So someone might love it and someone might not love it. And that's completely okay. Right.
Yeah. Did not grow the account at all. But I got my feet wet back into like constant creation.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I got my iPad, I decided like I'm going to do this thing daily for the year, but I'm also going to try and grow my account. And at that time, my wife had a very successful food blog, the 6 out of 10, and she was growing exponentially. And she had done so much research in growing her account, and she like mentored me through that process. And then there was like a synergy between like what I was creating and also like the posting kind of feedback loop, because based on what I was seeing people like resonated with or didn't resonate with, it immediately impacted like my emotional state.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
that impacted what I would paint next. And it's like fascinating how like these like small like micro kind of stimulus almost like, it's like the small snowball that starts at the top of a hill and
100%.
It becomes something you can never imagine. So in 2020, the Daily Art Challenge was very much, let me focus on my artistic ability and like mindfully grow the areas I'm not confident at, but also try and grow an audience. Mm-hmm. And I think that paid off because in 2020, my account started at 1,000 followers. And by the end of the year, I hit, I think it was like 18,000, which was
huge.
A lot.
Yeah.
That's massive growth.
Yeah.
And then was that primarily on Instagram? Was that like the main platform? And was it mostly with like, were you mostly doing video content or were you mostly doing like still image content?
Still image, because TikTok was new then. I don't even know if Instagram had reels at that point
in time.
If it
did, it was, everyone was shitting on it and I thought they were lame. Like it wasn't like what it is now.
Yeah. Yeah. And you could still grow just posting static images.
Mm-hmm.
So honestly, I feel like that was like a serendipitous thing for me at least, because I didn't have to worry about curating what I was making into a video, because that's a whole other beast that I'm only recently starting to get into. And it's hard.
Yeah.
It's video hard. Is hard.
it's a different beast for sure. Especially when it's like you're going from one medium to the next. But one thing I do think that people love, and with video you can show this, is the creative process and behind the scenes and all of that, which really lends itself to what you do because you're already making the art. So being able to make that type of content really helps. This is the question I don't even think I asked you this when we met at that PR dinner. The bus stops. how did that idea come? Because that was like when you showed, you're like, oh, this is my Instagram. And I like screamed. I was probably so inappropriate. I like, what? That's you? I've seen this. So like, I want to know the bus stops, where did that idea come from? And how did you execute that? Because that was like, that's like, I would argue the way everyone knows who you are, at least in the city.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. It kind of comes from that digital art stigma situation where I was trying to get my artwork in places. This was in 2021. Mm-hmm. So 2020, the year of growth and really finding like my voice as an artist. 2021, I feel like I found that voice. Mm-hmm. How do I show my art to people?
Exactly.
That was the thesis. And it was really hard actually because I didn't have physical canvas with physical paint on it. And a bunch of people were like, this isn't art, so we're not going to put it up.
And the idea of like the one of one and that pretentious like attitude that like only one person can own this one authentic like piece of art as well. It's, I would imagine, is like part of the issue with it as well.
Yeah. And is there a big stigma kind of in the traditional gallery world around like digital art and how that's presented and whatnot?
Yeah, for sure. It's twofold. Like there's that element of like the medium, but then also the content. Like pop art is not really seen as something that can be high art. And that was like a barrier of entry for me, honestly. I guess we can come back to that at a different point. Mm-hmm. But to get back to the question at hand, once I started like realizing that there was so much friction and how challenging it was, I had to try and do something. And I was really motivated. At that time, like I was doing pretty good in terms of like digital marketing. I'd picked up this new skill set and I was seeing like the business grow. So I had like a lump sum of money that I was willing to like reinvest into something. Mm-hmm. And one day I happened to walk past this like bus stop and it was the ad on it was really beautiful and it was massive. So that's when things started to like click. Maybe this can be the medium where I showcase my work. So I got in touch with like the people involved and we talked finance and budget and stuff like that. And it was a really risky thing because it was like my.
I was going to say, is that that's a, you don't have to say the exact number, but I got to imagine it's got to be a big investment because you did bus stops and like some billboards and whatnot where you're presenting your art, right?
Yeah. So I had two billboards and then one digital billboard on the QEW.
Oh,
40 bus stops and 40 bike share stops.
This is a big, and then how long did those run?
So the billboards and the digital bus stops were 3 weeks, but then the bike share was the best investment because some of those lasted like a year and a half.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
The bus stops were only 3 weeks, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, because they're turning out stuff all the time. And they were also, in my opinion, not the best investment because you get like an 8-second slot amongst like 25 other ads. So you can only see yours every like what, 8 times 25 right. seconds. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So you kind of did a full Toronto takeover of your art.
Yeah. And it was a huge investment. So I was scared. And like that sort of like campaign is like known as street furniture campaigns. It's not necessarily like something that you like track back to your website because it's about brand awareness.
For sure.
But I wanted more than that because it was so expensive. So I figured out a way to kind of like bring it back into social media by turning it into a scavenger hunt. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Like a challenge for people.
Exactly. And I had like this huge like giveaway sort of situation. I was giving away a lot of prints and apparel. And all I asked people to do were if they saw like the stuff in the streets to take a photo and tag it. So the idea was like, you know, if you saw the piece, you might have thought it was cool, but you didn't like have the time to investigate. And then Sarah posted it. You'd be like, oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
Oh, now there's an account tag to this. So let me go and check out this guy's account. And it worked brilliantly. It was awesome, honestly. And I think I didn't realize the impact that that had for me because it was still like kind of pandemic-y at that time. But like coming into like now, people still like recognize me on the streets as the artist that like took over Toronto and it's surreal. And
for the actual pieces of art, like how many art pieces of art did you were on the billboards and bus stops and whatnot? And what was the subject matter of those for people that might not have seen them?
Yeah, I picked 5 pieces in total and I'm really into music. So my work is focused on painting musicians that inspire me. And I paint them with a lot of really bold colors, kind of touching on digital art technique. One of the things with digital art is that it's really hard to get texture. There's like a layer of flatness that permeates it without a certain skill level. Mm-hmm. And with like traditional art, texture is innate to it because it's a physical object. So my solution to that was color, and like utilizing color in like kind of surreal, trippy ways to create the illusion of texture, and creating my own brushes to give each of my brush strokes a little bit more depth and visual texture, if not physical. But yeah, so I paint celebrities and I cover their faces with florals because I think that's beautiful, and it kind of touches on what like these people are to us. Like they mm-hmm. are entertainment, they are culture, but we don't really know who they are. But the flowers are often like inspired by like a person's upbringing, like where they were born. Like if they were born in Puerto Rico, like I'm doing a Bad Bunny piece right now, and I'm using Puerto Rico's national flower because it kind of touches on like elements that he's really proud of.
Yeah.
So there's like a tension between anonymity and like familiarity. So that's kind of fun for me. And that's what was up. I had a painting of Drake, I had a painting of Frank Ocean, Mac Miller, Snow Allegra, and Kendrick.
Nice. And obviously these resonate well with people, as Sarah is wearing the Taylor Swift piece herself now. I mean, people have touch points obviously with their favorite artists and whatnot, but then you bring something completely different to, like you're saying, the personality of someone, you bring out in a different way, which is super cool. But then it's, so their campaign, the bus stop campaign, resonated with people, I imagine, in that way too, where not only are they engaging with your art like this new way in the city, but then also just seeing their favorite artists probably, and maybe even people from around here in a new way too. Is that what kind of people resonated with in terms of feedback that you got while you were sharing it? Or
I think Toronto's a very cool city, and like my art thankfully resonates with the people in it. But I mean, maybe it's the city that inspired my art, you know, like a way. So like if I'm the artist that's creating what the city brought into me, then obviously the city is going to resonate with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fair enough.
You, because you do art of artists who have been like some of the craziest like fans that have purchased your art. Because you do it, like you have Drake, you've got Kendrick, you've got, I know you did Mac Miller, you've done Billie Eilish. Who were like the craziest, like probably fangirls, but who were the craziest fans that have been like obsessed with it?
That's a good question. Honestly, the Taylor Swift fans are
not surprising.
Are so.
That's one of your more recent ones too, right?
Yeah, I just dropped it.
I think we should tell people, because that's like part of the reason why we became friends, was because for those that didn't watch my TikTok video, which you should have, I explained it when you sent me the pieces, but we were at a PR dinner talking about your art, and then you floated that you were trying, or I think I probably brought up Taylor Swift first, because that's a very natural thing for me to do. And you were like, oh, I'm going to do a
piece you're going to New York.
Yes. Oh my God. That's why. Yes. Cause I was going to New York for midnight.
Talking about food recommendations.
Yes. Cause you told me to go to Emily Loves Pizza and I didn't.
next time.
But yes, you're giving me food recs. And then you're like, why are you going to New York? I'm like, oh, it's lame. I'm going to listen to Midnights. And then you said you're doing a Taylor Swift piece. And then I just went
not
off.
Lame, first of all.
I know, but like imagine just like sitting at a table of all these people, and it's like I just am like gushing about Taylor Swift. Like that's like a normal thing I do, apparently. But anyways, then I was like, watch the Reputation Stadium tour, and then now the Queen of Snakes. And also I'm still in my Reputation era, which is why this makes me extra happy that this is how it ended up turning out. It's so good. But so I feel like someone like her is a difficult artist. I mentioned this in that video I made, because when an artist has multiple eras or what they represent, like that can be probably a very difficult thing for you to come at, I would assume, because it's like there's different ways that people see that person.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that the question really was like, what can I find that inspires me and then translate that? Because it'll probably resonate with a bunch of other people. Yeah. Like, I don't have to try and squeeze every single era into one piece, especially because like it's so vast.
That would be like, that would just be a smorgasbord. That would be like too much. It would be a headache almost. Like you'd be like, you have like her sitting in Tennessee with like a little guitar.
Well, yeah, artists change so much too, right? That like it's tough to, it's almost impossible probably to capture everything in one.
Especially for like which artists.
Have there been any artists that have you've kind of, you know, featured in your art that have reached out to you or anything like that yet?
No, no one yet. Like a couple of people have seen my art. Like I know that for sure. Like I know Halsey has seen it. I know Snow Allegra has. I know Black has. But no one's actually contacted me personally. But I think that'll change. Coming into
Think about it. Like this should be someone's merch. Like Taylor's merch team, if you're watching this.
Well, that's what I was going to say, yeah.
Hire him because your merch, quite frankly, is lame and very expensive. But that's what I was saying though. It's like, why would you not hire like artists who are already doing it to like for sure. your merch and stuff? Like
I 100% agree. And that's not just Taylor merch. I went to so many concerts this summer and like I would always check out the merch table and there's not a lot of interesting designs. You know, some stuff's just like the tour poster or whatever it's going to be or some text, which is okay. But like something like this is way more interesting too.
So one thing you've started, and I mentioned it in your intro, one thing you've started to do a lot more is partnerships now, which is great. But what are some of the struggles, I guess, that come with a creative? Because I mean, I even struggle with it from a video perspective, but I think art is so much more and what you're doing is like personal. So how do you deal with the stress of working with a brand and timelines? And if you're not feeling creative, like for the Taylor Swift piece, you could take your time. No one knew you were working on that. You could do it whenever. But if you're working with X brand and they want probably a tighter deadline than they realize at how many million hours it takes to work on the art, how has it been balancing that as part of your new business venture?
Yeah, that's a great question. Honestly, working with brands is like a double-edged sword because on one hand, collaboration can really bring out like an art piece that I could never have thought of on my own. But on the other hand, you are still trying to create artwork for somebody else and it's a lot slower of a process and I like to work quick. But I think like based on at least like the most recent brand I've been working with, it's been about just kind of putting my like boundaries very clearly to like the party I'm working with where like, you know, they'll have this deadline. I'll be like, look, honestly, I can't hit that deadline. Like I need this much time. Like, can we figure out like how that we can make that work? And often they're able to accommodate that. So that's nice, but it's definitely a whirlwind. Like it'll be nice to kind of take a break and work on my own stuff for a little bit after this one's done.
Well, because I was going to say like that's also the balance. And you and I have talked about this before, how like you sometimes get so tied up in the brand stuff that you're then not able to work on your own stuff. And that must be difficult.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I always say too, is like, and we've talked about this with other people as well who are involved in the creative industries in some capacity, is that, you know, what is it? The Scorsese, you do one for the studio and then you do one for yourself. It's like, how do you balance then the creative passion and obviously the necessity to, you know, like we started off our talk here of how to run it as a business and make ends meet with, you know, this as a creative moneymaker as well.
So what has been your biggest wow I made it moment so far?
I mean, people recognizing me on the streets to this day is super weird. And like, they get like, they'll be like, I can't talk to you right now because I'm so starstruck. And like hearing those words is like honestly a little bit awkward for me because I don't feel like that, you know, like I like how I've developed as an artist and I can focus on like these like technical things or like I'm proud of like hitting X milestone.
Yeah.
But then like to a bunch of other people, like it's only recently become news to me that I've had like some meaningful impact and that's, I'm at a loss for words, honestly. It's super cool.
Well, because like it's so personal. Like people like purchase your art maybe because like they see something of themselves in it and then it becomes part of like their home, which is like a really personal thing. And that's like really no different than the artists that you are covering who make music that touch people. You are now making art that represents maybe the song that they listen to in that way. So I feel like it's no different than Kendrick Lamar, a different extreme, but Kendrick Lamar Drake getting people going, oh my god, your song meant so much to me. I'm sure you probably get that with your art then because it's a representation, a direct representation of the stuff they already love.
Yeah, it's really trippy and it's really cool, honestly. It's rewarding to see because it's like a lonely industry, like being on a set like this and seeing how many people are involved and just like any other sort of like team-based creative occupation. there's so many moving parts and so many people that like you're busy, you're able to like bounce off of the people that are around you. But like being an artist, it's a very independent thing. And like throughout that pandemic in 2020, it was just me in my bedroom and my iPad, like just working with so much intensity. But I didn't have FOMO during that time because everyone was locked up. But now there's always a decision to make, like, do I work or do I have fun? And where do I find the balance of being ambitious, but also like enjoying the fruits of my labor? And that's kind of like my goal for this new era of my life. I just turned 30 in November. So I'm hoping this decade is the decade of balance, but consistent growth still.
That's what I was going to say, because you kind of do have a team between like your brother who works with you. And then obviously your wife clearly has been like a huge impact in your career as well.
Raksanafsha, big shout out.
But it's like crazy because at the end of the day, even if all these people work with you, it's you and your iPad, and you have to be the one that like makes it happen. So I do hope that you find a balance this year as well.
Thank you.
So next up, we are going to move to our mailbag, where maybe we'll give some people some ideas. This is our voicemail segment where you can submit questions on our Talking Fast Show Instagram. You can also email us at talkingfastshow@gmail.com, and we will try to answer as many questions as possible, give life advice. They could be serious, they could be intense. And these questions all actually came from our Instagram. So shout out everyone that follows us on Instagram. So we're going to kick things off with, how do you prioritize your relationship with a busy work and social life? I think we can all speak to this if you want to kick off.
Oh man, this is definitely tough because now I also work with my wife, and figuring out how to communicate boundaries and also goals and like dividing work and like pleasure is like the perpetual struggle. Mm-hmm. I feel like over the course of our relationship, it also like really helped the motivation stay up. Mm-hmm. Because you have someone that's rooting for you and like, yeah, really giving you honest advice. And you know they have your best intentions in mind, but like it can easily transform into something where like you're too dependent, or you take things like very personally when it's not a personal thing. As an artist, yeah, I'm very sensitive. So I've developed a thicker skin, and Afsha's always been a very clear communicator. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how we've been able to like really turn this into something great. But I think communication honestly is like the most important thing.
For sure, because then it's also like, when is it a work conversation versus a personal conversation, and like not getting mad over work things when it's like, this isn't like not bringing that back home for, and so that would be, yeah, that'd be a constant, it's just a constant, I'm sure, evolving thing that you have to work through. What about you?
And what's your advice? Communication is key. And I was going to say scheduling, you kind of alluded to that a bit too, but scheduling for me is always huge. And because I work in a role that is kind of always on and needing to be on my phone and emailing, mm-hmm, at kind of all hours of the day for various reasons, finding those pockets of time where like you're not, you know, distracted is key, but then also taking advantage of the moments where like no one's expecting anything from you. So my girlfriend is like doing her hair or something like that before you go, I'm like, boom, let's go, 30 minutes ready to answer some emails.
I will say though, Haley, since I follow Haley on Instagram, when it's actually, I make the conscious choice. Have you noticed this? When she posts on Instagram that you two are hanging out, I
loves you. She talks about this specifically. So, she's just like, Sarah is one of your clients that knows when like personal time is happening.
So like when it's great because she posts on Instagram. So Haley, keep it up. She posts on Instagram when you guys are together, and I will like hard stop, not text you.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a funny hee-hee, like a friendship text, not like a work text. Like that would be, but it's a great way, because I'm like, I know, like, I mean, you literally posted a photo from Mexico, like on your phone in the middle of the water. It's like, it was like, I can understand like why that would be frustrating. But yeah, it's, I feel like the scheduling thing is.
Yeah. What about you? How do you balance it? You're someone who has a ton of things on the go as well.
All you have to do is date someone that you were friends with first. So all your friends are the same friend. So it makes your life a lot easier. Good. I mean, like that's my situation. Like Nolan and I were like friends first, and we were in the same friend group. So my university friend group is the people that were like over last night to watch football. Like it's that same group that I go to Cuba with, like that group of 10 or 12 of us. So that makes it automatically easier for me because when it's our friend group's time, I never have to worry about like balancing that. But it is, you're right. It is just about being intentional. It's about like when we decide to turn the phones off at the end of the night, like what we always try to have at least one show that we're watching together that we can't skip ahead unless the other person's there. Then that like sets aside time for us to watch it unless it's like The Bear and we binge it in one night. So,
okay. Well, Haley, if you're watching this, I watched the season finale without her. So,
oh my
I apologize.
He's like, oh my God.
Maybe cut this out and I'll watch it a second time. No, I can never do that. I wouldn't do that.
You can cut this out. Then I'll just send it to her myself.
Also, I have to give a shout out to Nolan. Nolan is really nice guy. We love Nolan.
Shout out Nolan.
You shouted out Haley. I got to shout out Nolan. That's true. Nolan's great. That's good. Question number two for voicemail. Something you wish brands knew or took more into consideration about influencers.
/ creatives. You're kind of both now. Kind.
And you kind of alluded to this.
We met at an influencer event. So you're considered in that that world
it's
now.
It's honestly weird. Yeah, being an artist is a weird territory because you can't flex like, you know, how much you've made as a business where small businesses do that. Sorry, this is like a tangent.
No. I love it. I love tangents.
Yeah. But like, you know, like if like I had like a cookie business, I could be like, I made this month, this amount of money like this year. But like as an artist, it's like weird. Like, oh, this guy's so arrogant. But it's like there's that component, but it's like, is it this like construct of what an artist should be that keeps artists back? Anyways, that's 100%. Like a thing I want to dig into at some point.
Well, it's, I mean, also like actually Izzy, our associate producer, was like, we were talking the Uber here about how artists like, it's weird because you can, your work can be worth nothing one day and then like millions of dollars the next. And it's like, how do you value it? Because it's not actually valued by your time and hours spent working on the art. It's based on who cares about it, which is I can't even fathom. That's a really weird spot to be in. And now for you, it's valued based off your audience, how many eyeballs are going to see it, how long it takes you to make it. Plus, it's your own original IP, so they have to pay for that too. Mm-hmm. So there's like, you're right, it's way more layers than like a cookie business.
Yeah. Actually, I think the IP thing is, I think the next part of this, because the most recent brand I worked with, we didn't really talk about IP, like my rate kind of just included IP in it, but I didn't realize how valuable IP was until like they requested that they put their trademark on my piece. And like it can be considered like a flex in a way, but it's also like, oh, this is no longer mine. Like I made it, but
well, putting on the manager Jacob cap, like send that contract my way, because we'll get the value out of that.
Jacob's really good at that. I think that kind of goes into though what my answer would be, and I think it was just if you are reaching out to a creator, an influencer, creative artist, whatever, you're reaching out to them to work with them. Understand that that means that you're wanting to work with them for what they already do day to day. So don't expect something that's not authentically them. Like I always find it funny when like a brand will reach out, be like, we love Sarah's stuff, we want to work with her, but here's something that's totally outside her niche and what she doesn't normally do, and we need her to do this transition and this and that for the video. Like then I go, then why did you reach out? Like that doesn't make any sense.
And that's kind of what I would say too, to add on to this question, not that I'm any kind of influencer, but adding on to what you were just saying, it's just like, recognizing that a creative and influencer is yes, there's an opportunity for a mouthpiece to be a mouthpiece for your brand in some way with collaboration, but they're also just a regular actual human being that is just going about their daily lives sharing what they want to share. So
like it would
remember
be
that as opposed to thinking that they're this massive multinational corporation. You know what I mean?
I know.
That rarely happens though.
Rarely. Yes, exactly. Okay, so the third question, I thought this was really fun. You're offered dinner with anyone in the world, who would it be? We're going to go with alive for this one. Because like the alive or dead ones, like everyone always says that. But
this is like a solid question that people get asked frequently.
It's a dinner party question. That's a good one. We can take a moment. I'll play some Jeopardy music.
Can we go with two? We have two, because I think it's always better to have like with three people here. It's a good conversation. You know what I mean?
It feels like a date if it's just one person that you're having.
Yeah,
dinner with. Is that kind of the energy?
Dynamics so different.
Okay, so you can kick us off if you already have two people. I haven't even thought about somebody.
No, you know who I would love. I'm gonna just choose one. I already talked about previous episodes. My one celebrity crush, Anna Kendrick. No, it's not gonna be her. Sorry, Anna. You know, Janelle Monáe.
Oh, she's cool as hell.
And I feel like she would be a great dinner conversation. She's an interesting person, super talented, and just like gives off nice vibes.
She's lived a lot of lives too. Like people know Janelle Monáe for like different like eras and things. And I think she dresses really cool.
She's probably one of the coolest people that I've ever met.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't.
like that you ever one of the coolest. He's so like, strong. It's so real. He's manifesting it so hard. He like feels
people I would like to meet.
I think mine goes without saying. Taylor Swift. But that's only because they said offer dinner. I don't want to meet Taylor Swift in like a meet and greet, quick, flash, photo, hi, bye. Like, I don't want that. And I've talked about this, I swear to God, in other episodes. I want that like moment. I talked about it with Shannon. I was like, I need that moment of like, of time with her to like talk about the creative process and her filmmaking and this, and like not just, oh my God, I love your music. It means so much to me. Like, I would feel like I was doing myself an injustice if that happened. So mine's Taylor Swift, and I'll wear your shirt when it happens too.
My girl.
I got you. How about you?
I think it'd be The Weeknd.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's my favorite artist, and like, he's also from like my ends in Scarborough. So I think like with him, there's so much mystique. Like, he is a very enigmatic guy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much behind the scenes that like I would love to learn more about. And also like, yeah, figure out how we can collaborate. I think that would be the coolest thing. Exactly. Like, I really want to design this guy's album cover or something for him. That'd be cool. One day. I think it'll happen.
I see it in your future. I think you will do an album cover for someone. That'd be sick.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on Talking Fast. How was this experience? Good? Rate 5 stars?
Yeah, 5. 7 out of 5.
As I'm like staring at you, like, would you rate 5 stars?
No, you both are awesome. Honestly, it's been a great time.
Amazing. Well, make sure you check out Nishi's art. This is your time to promote yourself. So you can look to a camera. You can promote whatever you're working on. Promote whatever you want. This is your moment.
Cool. My name is Nishi Kroma, and I've been doing this for a few years now. I don't really know what to say.
Where can they find you? Where can the people find you? What are you working on? What are you selling? You're selling this?
Yeah.
We want to make you money.
Yeah, where do I get it? I want to buy this. Where do I get it?
You can find my stuff at nishidkroma.com. My Instagram and TikTok is at nishid.kroma. I'm planning on creating a lot more art this year. Trying to limit my brand collaborations so that I can create art that you guys want to see. In the pipeline right now are a Bad Bunny piece, a Blackpink piece, and a Burna Boy piece.
Ooh,
I'm gonna be at Coachella.
Ooh.
Really?
Yeah, I'm gonna be at Coachella.
Is this an exclusive? You're gonna be at Coachella?
Yeah, no, I bought the tickets.
Oh, okay.
This wasn't like some cool influencer thing, but I'm hoping to use this as an opportunity to flex what Nishi Kroma as a media company can also do. And hopefully become the artist that, you know, like at Lollapalooza and like these like Coachella type assholes. They always have an artist that's designing like everything.
Yeah.
It'd be sick to be that guy.
That's a perfect fit.
5 years.
We've heard it here. So then we'll bring you back once that's happened, and then we can play the clip back.
And I don't think it's going to take 5 years.
I don't think it's going to. Dude, you said you were worried to paint on an iPad 3 years ago. And now you have a whole like business about it. Thank you so much for being here. And thank you so much for listening or watching to Talking Fast. He rated it 7 stars out of 5. So wherever you rate your podcast, rate us 5 stars. Subscribe. Like all the good things. We don't want the negative juju here. And we will see you next Wednesday.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.